Hey, how you guys doing? This is Ketan Devani, host of the Total Bitcoin Podcast Show and the Total Connector Show. I'm really super excited for this special episode with Marty Bent and Zia Sartre. Marty Bent and Zia Sartre, both of them actually don't need any introduction. Marty Bent is, you know, the author and the brain behind Tales of the Crypt together with Matt Odell and with his awesome newsletter, which drops in every day, and you know, giving people the bigger picture. So the whole topic, what we're going to talk about, circles around this recent news about Iran's central bank buying directly, or there is an edict or some kind of law or proposal. But it's definite. It's just the details not disclosed and confidential. So the central bank of Iran essentially going to buy directly from the Bitcoin miners in Iran, and just a handful, maybe, I don't know, 14, 15 miners in Iran who have sort of the license, the permit to mine, being subsidized. So the details, you know, are really not disclosed yet, at what rate and how they're going to purchase it. So there are a bunch of questions surrounding, you know, this this recent update, this news, and this is what we're going to talk about, like what kind of second, third order effects going to that have on other countries, central banks, Bitcoin mining globally. Would that lead, you know, also, is that like interlinked, interconnected with the critical adoption rate, with the mass adoption? And, you know, what's the situation in Iran? Like, you know, how do Iranians, seek Bitcoin? How do they interact with Bitcoin? And, you know, what are the authorities going to do, the Financial Action Task Force, this unappointed, organization? Are they going to put, like, Bitcoin addresses on the blacklist? So a bunch of questions, and I really appreciate, you know, all the work that Zia Sartre and Marty Bent have been doing with their podcast, Tales of the Crypt, and Marty's Tales of the Crypt and his newsletter. Hence also his company, which is also a co-founder of Great American Mining. So that's what we're going to also talk about. And Zia Trout, you know, Zia has started his educational YouTube channel, which I think is great. Just, you know, for a lot of Iranians are in an urgent need to, you know, to gather knowledge, to acquire knowledge about, you know, to use the tools, wallets, Samurai wallets, whatever that is, privacy, security, and everything that surrounds that. So without further ado, this is my talk with Marty Bent and Zia Sartre. Hope you're gonna enjoy this, and please like it, subscribe, and share it. Thanks so much.
All right, welcome to the Total Bitcoin Podcast Show. I'm really happy and pleased to have Zia Sartre and Uncle Marty Bent from Tales of the Crypt on my show. I've been, you know, wanting to do this show like for a long time, either one-on-one with you, Marty, or with both of you. And now we have a really good reason. So thanks again for your time and coming on my show. How are you guys doing? Zia, Marty?
Thank you, Kevin. So I'm doing pretty well. Yeah. The weather is really good here in Tehran nowadays. So we're expecting a cold weather in the next few days, maybe.
Right.
Yeah, I'm doing well as well. Thank you for having me.
Thanks,
Mark. Excited for the conversation.
Yeah, I just actually received your newsletter. It's like a micro dosage of, you know, comprehension, expanding knowledge that you spread. And I think really want to thank you, you know, for all your work you do, because it's indispensable, all the work you're doing. You know, I love your show. I loved, you know, those shows, especially you do one-on-one with Marty, Matt Odell, where, you know, there are those enlightening moments where Marty goes like, what the fuck is wrong with these people? Wake up, you know? And I'm like, he speaks exactly my language. You know, he knows exactly what's going on. But, you know, nevertheless, it's like on so many levels, you bring so much comprehension into this space with it's on a, you know, geopolitical, macroeconomical, the essence of Bitcoin or technical level. So again, thanks so much. So let me give a little bit of background info, because I think most of my listeners don't need an introduction to you guys. I'm just going to go right into the, you know, medias res. What I want to talk about with you guys is, of course, you know, the Iran situation. And let me just summarize for our listeners just a couple of key points. So as of last year, 2019, Iran legalized the so-called cryptocurrency mining and instituted heavy-handed regulations to control the practice. And then with access to oil reserves, of course, and relatively cheap electricity, Iran can now offer, or could offer, you know, heavily subsidized power to miners and offset, you know, a bulk of the cost of mining cryptocurrencies like Bitcoin, especially for firms that play by the rules. I mean, anything else is shitcoins, but you know, we don't need to go into that. Alternatives to fiat currencies like the US dollar are attractive to the powers in Iran, as economic sanctions from the United States and other countries largely prevented from transacting with the world's reserve fiat currency. And as Iran, the Iran currency rial suffers from hyperinflation, its people are seeking an alternative store of value. So, you know, at the end of the day, because of these sanctions, it's, I don't care, I think we got to get rid of every nation state. I mean, that's my position with its, nation state government, with its whatever form it takes. But I do care, you know, about the people, whether they're in Iran, in the United States, or in Austria, where I live. So this is, you know, I guess the, to sum it up, it's what are we trying to achieve with Bitcoin, right? And so what I want to maybe start off with Zia, what is, maybe can you give us, because there's some details that are still somehow not disclosed or confidential. So the Central Bank of Iran has decided to buy off the directly from the Bitcoin miners in Iran, Bitcoin, or they call it whatever in general, cryptocurrencies, in order to circumvent the sanctions and buy imports. Now, can you maybe give our listeners, can you give us like a little bit more details or insights, what's really going on, and especially the situation with the Bitcoin mining in Iran?
Yeah, so this thing started like the regulation sides of Bitcoin here about mining in Iran started like 2 years ago. So they first started cracking down on miners. And then after a while, a lot of miners tried to somehow get close to the government and maybe help the government to regulate this space so that they could do their mining operations. So this recent news about the central bank using Bitcoin for imports and buying them or maybe transferring them from miners to trades with the world. This thing is maybe somehow a result of those miners trying to lobby and somehow help the government regulate themselves. So, the situation with the mining here in Iran is not good. We have a lot of cheap electricity actually, and an abundance of energy like CHP, CHP power plants, and a lot of gas, natural gas, to be used as a source of electricity, and it could all be used for mining because it's really difficult to actually export gas, and so they could just somehow turn it into Bitcoin, just transform it into Bitcoin this way, and Bitcoin could really facilitate this somehow export of gas for them. And they could just open up for investors to come in inside Iran and do their investment and make big mining operations here in Iran. But unfortunately, the government doesn't do this, and we don't actually know why. It's mostly because that the government is not a unified body here in Iran. So some sections of the government may have their interest in not letting mining operations carry on. Some may have other reasons to support mining in Iran. But overall, the thing is that the mining situation right now here in Iran is not a healthy situation because most miners are trying to hide themselves, are doing their operations secretly. That's generally a good practice, actually, but the thing is, here they need to do it because the government will crack down on them because they call mining operations illegal unless they obtain some permits and stuff like that. And the permits are not are somehow ridiculous because the permits are only obtained by very few people, and these permits make the price of energy for them, price of electricity, much higher than what it should be, because Iran has like maybe one or two electricity rates for everyone, anyone in the industries and households and all of that. But the thing is, for miners, they have made this official electricity rate only for miners, and it is maybe 9 times the usual price. So it may not be that profitable for miners to do their mining business officially and in a regulated way. So this is generally not a good situation here. It's not the best for mining, but still, you see that miners are doing their thing in Iran, and they are actually doing their mining operations. So actually, I don't think that what the government is trying to do will stop miners, because, well, it's much more profitable for people to do mining right now rather than that. Or otherwise, they need like to do like the usual industries, and the usual industries and the economy situation here in Iran is in a very bad situation too. So most businesses, most like factories and stuff like that go bankrupt. And well, Bitcoin is not like that, and Bitcoin offers them in another way, and it's much more profitable. So they're gonna do it, even if the government cracks down on them. I know a lot of people who were even jailed because of mining here in Iran, but that didn't stop people from mining. It may have impacted the numbers, but it's slowly and gradually it's increasing.
Marty, I mean, I'm real curious your take. You know, what would be from your perspective? Because you know, you are the founder of Gold Great American Mining. Would it have with this process? I mean, if they have like cheap electricity, cheap energy in Iran, and they and as I've heard, you know, also from UZI, they're just a very small number of people who have you know, official sort of license or permit to do mining. But I mean, it would be so logical, it would be like the next rational step to go fully into Bitcoin mining. Would that have, what kind of cascading effect or triggering effect would that have on other miners? Like, you know, for your company or for, you know, Upstream Data, for example, with Street Barber or other miners, what would be the implication? Where do you see this going?
I think Zaya touched on it a bit. The inability for Iranian gas producers to build pipelines to send their gas to other markets to profit that way really forces those producers in Iran to get creative. And that's actually one of our taglines and something we say when we're pitching Great American Mining to oil and gas producers, is that Bitcoin mining is a digital pipeline. So instead of building a pipeline and trying to build it across borders and then send that gas across borders, if it's being hindered by sanctions or just the inability of a government to allow a free market to develop so that producers can send that gas to market, then Bitcoin mining is the perfect solution, because you actually don't have to build that pipeline. You can just send that gas a few dozen feet to your generators and turn it into Bitcoins. But it seems like the government's doing something similar to what the government in Quebec did to the miners that were using their hydroelectric dam, where they sort of they set different prices for people who were mining specifically off the hydroelectric energy. So that it is annoying that the state steps in and sort of perturbs entrepreneurs in the free market from actually just taking advantage of low energy costs, and would actually make sense for everybody to allow that market to develop freely. In terms of how would a budding Iranian mining industry affect what we do at Great American Mining or somebody like an Upstream Data that Steve Barber's building. It would just add hash rate to the network. Depending on how many miners we're plugging in at any given point in time, it would just affect our total overall hash rate percentage that we have. The opportunity that cheap natural gas provides the world of miners, particularly, we think we can mine profitably, even if the Bitcoin price crashes pretty significantly due to how cheap the gas is, especially where we're consuming it. So from a like direct network competition standpoint, it would just affect hash rate a bit, which would affect our overall percentage of hash rate. And then what I'm more interested to see is if the US, the G10 countries, people are in UN and NATO, how they react. Like, will there be a strong reaction to an Iranian central bank using Bitcoin to purchase imports, just from a regulatory perspective? So maybe the effect from a network competition standpoint isn't as great as the potential regulatory crackdown that the West could potentially pursue. And they use all these boogeymen, like, oh, Iran is mining Bitcoin, like, so you guys can't use Bitcoin. That's one thing I'm worried about, but not too worried about it. I think Bitcoin's come too far. It's been around for too long, and there's a lot of entrenched industries and individuals in the U.S. that it'd be really hard to sort of stop Bitcoin at this point here.
Do you see any other like second, third order effects? Like, if, you know, let's say we're really optimistic, it would. I mean, the unfortunate thing is really that Iranian government, or, you know, this theocratic regime is actually intervening into the free market. I mean, there is no free market. We don't have, in general, no free market. There's no free market principle. There's no real capitalism, actually. But, you know, it's really severe in Iran. So if they are like, you know, at least in negotiation with the official permitted licensed Bitcoin miners, are saying, and we don't even know yet, you know, at what price they're going to set, you know, the Bitcoin and how they're going to buy it. I mean, are there any details like disclosed, Zia? Because I find it unfortunate that, you know, it's a total governmental intervention into the, you know, into huge potential.
Well, the thing with the government here is that, the government is actually, what they disclosed was that the first enactment of the cabinet, the first article of the enactment that the cabinet office issued last year, the first article was changed. It was what it was before. It was Bitcoin transfers or transactions are not permitted inside of Iran for like institutions and other organizations or something like that. Then they changed it now to they could be used, these transfers, this could be used for imports, because like we may have like difficulties in imports actually sending money for imports. Now it could be used for that. So the thing with the Central Bank of Iran getting in this equation is that the Central Bank is really manipulative, and they try to plan and actually mostly interfere with procedures here in Iran. They do this with the USD. So we have we had increase of the price surge of USD like tens of times in the last few years, and it's mostly due to what like central banks and also like political stuff with the foreign policies and all that. The central bank is always, even as sometimes they even issue announcements every week about the USD price, and they are always trying to somehow control the market and control the prices. So when it comes down to Bitcoin, I guess it's going to be the same way. They're going to handle this thing similar to what they do to the USD market here in Iran. And they may have this, what do you call it? There's the system, it's called NEMA exchange system or something. It's for people who want to like use USD for imports or exports or something like that. And the central bank like decides the price, and they decide even how much you can use actually. Like they may tell you that you can only use $1,000 or $2,000 a day, or I don't know, $100,000 a month or something like that. So they may design a system like that for Bitcoin. So in a way that they may receive the Bitcoin from miners, or somehow manage or control that the miner sends the Bitcoin to the one who needs Bitcoin for to be used for imports. And currently there are no details about what they are going to do, but this is the idea that they it's the same idea that they do with USD, and I guess it would be the same for Bitcoin too. Because so let's imagine another way. Any other way with the central bank in the middle would be that the central bank should hold Bitcoin. And that's, I guess, something that the central bank doesn't want people to think about. Like, so I'm the central bank of Iran and I'm holding Bitcoin. So that's something that if they want to interfere, that's going to be the way. They're not going to be the holder of Bitcoins, and they don't want to announce such a thing, even if they do it somehow. Yeah. So I guess it's we should wait and see what they're going to do.
You know, I always say, and I think a lot of other Bitcoiners say that too, like Giacomo Zucco, or I don't know, what's your position, Marty, on that? Is I always say, you know, Bitcoin is the black market money for total humanity. So it's not going to prevent people from, you know, eventually, because Zia, you know, is just started his educational channel on YouTube, you know, on whatever Samurai wallets, privacy, security. I mean, really also basic stuff that people really, a lot of people don't even have a clue about what kind of risks they're taking, or especially when it comes to security and privacy. So do you think it's like this is an inevitable process, like, you know, this to reach this intransigent minority or critical mass adoption, whether it's in Iran or elsewhere? What is your position on that, Marty? Where do you see this going?
Yeah, I mean, I think these type of actions from central banks and government should be expected. They're not going to just let Bitcoin happen without a fight, or without trying to slow it down at least. And they'll try to annoy Bitcoin users as much as possible. But I do think Bitcoin's permissionless and distributed nature makes it inevitable to succeed for the individual. Like, for example, if there are natural gas producers in Iran that aren't sending that gas to the grid, and they're able to somehow mine off grid out of the sight of the government, like they can mine Bitcoin for themselves and not have to deal with the government. But obviously there's risk involved. If you don't get the permit, they find out that you're mining, you could potentially get in some trouble. So it's just the individuals within Iran weighing the risk of mining, quote unquote, illegally off grid, which is harder to sort of locate and stop if you can do it like small little chunks. Like we do our mining in shipping containers, and it just looks like there's a shipping container sitting on a well pad or natural gas around a natural gas pipeline, and it's sort of hard to know exactly what's going on in that box unless you step in it. So from a logistics standpoint, if enough producers are mining Bitcoin on the down low, off grid, could be hard to catch. And then they could mine Bitcoin and use it the way they see fit without having to go through the government. But it gets too hard to stop from a logistics standpoint at a certain at a certain point because there's just too many people doing it on a smaller level that it's like whack-a-mole. But I'm not sure. I'm not an expert on what's going on in Iran, and that's just a possibility if people are willing to risk that, because you also get the miners into the country, which is a potential attack vector. Border agents seeing that you're getting miners delivered can rat you out, stuff like that. So a lot of things to take into consideration, but yeah, I think this is just a temporary roadblock that we have to deal with, our generation. I think in a couple generations from now, we'll look back and laugh at the attempts to stop this thing.
How many illegal miners do you think are there in Iran, Zia? I mean, you said, you know, there's most of them, the majority is like doing it illegal, right? I mean,
yeah, it's really funny. The word illegal should be used for something which is not legal. But the thing is that the miners are like when they started, they were not thinking that they're doing an illegal thing, because it was electricity provided with the industrial electricity rates, which is a standard. So you could use that electricity and pay the price. And you are paying the price of electricity to the government. So what's wrong? Why do you criminalize this act? Because you see miners profiting a lot, and you have a very bad electricity grid in a very bad situation. It's very inefficient. And you are afraid that the government is afraid that the rise of miners and this profitability from Bitcoin may affect the government in some aspects, like from a monetary standpoint, and from people may start using Bitcoin in the country, and that's something which is not it may not be approved by the government. They will not approve of that, because they won't have any control on people this way. And the other thing would be that the miners may take down the grid, because it's a very inefficient grid, and that's actually a very serious and very it makes sense. This may happen actually if miners use the grid. So miners started using power plants. So we have a lot of private power plants all over Iran, and they started using power plants. The power, the CHP with CHP gas generators from gas source. And the gas source is also provided by the government. They started doing this, and they started generating their own electricity. And the government started to crack down on power plants too. So now what? What's wrong? What we are doing wrong? So they said that we have a subsidy on the gas price, and now we should take this subsidy. And you should, the miners should pay the price of gas without a subsidy. And then they made this tariffs or electricity rates for miners. What I wanted to say is that mining was not illegal, and it was not a criminal activity or something. The government is always seeking ways to criminalize this act, even if you find a way which is completely legal, completely regulated. They are trying to find the government trying to find new ways to criminalize this. So how many miners are doing mining operations in Iran not on the government's standards, not using the government standards? Well, we simply don't know. There are some analysis about the amount of hash rate in Iran, and we may somehow calculate something. We could just say there's 50, 100 megawatts. I don't remember the percent of my hash rate from miners in Iran, but I guess it was 3% or 4% of the so-called Bitcoin network or something like that. So we could just have a picture of what is the mining, current situation of mining operations in Iran. And we could say that actually none of that hash rate is regulated or being done legally from the government standpoint. And most, as Marty said, most people are trying to somehow hide their operations, and they are carrying on with their with their operations.
I heard that. Now, is that official that Iran or the Central Bank of Iran has changed its reserve currency or the trading currency from U.S. dollar to Chinese yuan? Is that official or?
I don't think so. I'm not sure.
Okay, because of the sanctions. Yeah.
Well, they may try different things. They talked about euros back in the past. They were changing it to euro because they always want to keep this position that they have, that they are opposing the United States. So they may do it like that, but most people use like USD. Most trades are being conducted with USD. The black market for USD and I guess dirham also, Emirates dirham, are the main things that are used in Iran because of imports, which are actually conducted mostly from Dubai, from United Emirates. And yeah, the main thing is USD, and there's a little portion which is dedicated to dirham.
Mm-hmm. Marty, I understand, you know, that the central bank of Iran, Iranian government, maybe trying to keep a low profile, and they wouldn't even probably admit it if it were true that they're, you know, stacking up sats or Bitcoin as a reserve asset. But what if they did? I mean, this is my question. Like, what would be the long-term effects or implications, consequences? Would that like trigger something like a process of so-called hyper-Bitcoinization eventually, or how would you interpret
that? I don't know if it would incite hyper-Bitcoinization immediately or anything like that, but no, I just think it sort of validates Bitcoin's incentive system, right? Like when you're pushed into a corner and you're forced to get creative, particularly from a monetary perspective, from accessing a global economy, like Bitcoin is there for you. Like, and it's pretty messed up that Iran has been sanctioned to a point where they have to turn to Bitcoin to actually import goods into their country. But luckily, Bitcoin's there for them. It's an apolitical distributed cash system that anybody can access, no matter if you're sanctioned or not. So I think if it were ever to be the case where the Iranian central bank announced that it was stacking sats and holding Bitcoin on its balance sheet, it would just be a data point that highlights that Bitcoin works. And then maybe it incites other countries, in particular situation similar to Iran. I mean, Venezuela is already doing it. We know that, but maybe someone like Brazil or countries in Africa start adding Bitcoin to their balance sheets because other countries start doing it. And so, I think Bitcoin adoption in terms of it being adopted by like central banks around the world, it's going to start with the Irans and Venezuela's and African nations being first movers, and it'll work its way up towards the bigger central banks, whether it be Bank of Japan, Federal Reserve, ECB, stuff like that. And I think it happens in countries that need it most first.
Do you see that like a sort of a dynamic interplay with companies like MicroStrategy, MicroSale, all these companies, and now maybe even, mutual funds and eventually pension funds, and and now governments, central banks. Is there a dynamic interplay? Is like, what would be the effect? Like, if it starts, like, this is what they call like hyper-Bitcoinization. It's like, you know, different on different levels, individuals, companies, funds, pension funds, eventually, you know, central banks, putting it on balance sheets, putting it in their reserve assets sheets.
Yeah, I don't think there's like a direct interplay of one decision affecting or one event affecting the next, but I think they're separate and disparate events where you have a MicroStrategy accumulating Bitcoin on their balance sheet. You have a company like Square putting Bitcoin on their balance sheet, and at the same time, you have the Iranian central bank putting it on their balance sheet, or if they're not putting it on their balance sheet, they're using it for imports. And each individual actor in the scenarios I just laid out just helps solidify and validate Bitcoin's use case and value proposition to the world. And if you have the Michael Saylors and the Jack Dorseys of the world over here in the U.S., adding Bitcoin to their balance sheets as publicly traded American companies and putting their trust in the network and being very vocal and public about that. And at the same time, you have central banks of countries that are sanctioned by the U.S. doing the same thing. I think it actually makes it harder for the U.S. government to stop Bitcoin, even though someone they perceive as an enemy is using it to their benefit. You have that happening, but as well as some of your most innovative entrepreneurs within U.S. borders believing in it as well. So you have to explain to them why they're not able to leverage something they believe in so ardently, which if America is truly the land of the free, it'd be hard to ban it here again at this point, especially if Bitcoin price does what it does, or it has done in the past over the next 12 to 18 months, and you sort of repeat another bull cycle and you induce the FOMO of individuals and companies here in the United States adding Bitcoin to their personal or company balance sheets. It's just going to be very hard. I think the cat's out of the bag. And so I don't think like the Iranian central bank using Bitcoin to purchase imports affects Michael Saylor's decision to add to his Bitcoin. I just think they're separate events happening at different parts of the world at the same time that benefit Bitcoin when combined.
Sia, you wanted to add something, sir?
No.
Okay. So you know, the mother of all inventions or creativity or action, human action, is you know, out of necessity. It's pain, suffering, pain points. So maybe I'm overly optimistic, but I see sort of a exponential adoption rate wherever, you know, globally, but especially now what we're talking Iran. Now let's go to some of these questions that you know, one of our followers asked, is like, I mean, you partially answered that, I think, Marty, at the beginning. What is the FATF, the Financial Action Task Force, going to do? Can we see more Bitcoin addresses on the blacklist? For the first question.
So what is the Financial Action Task Force going to do? Yeah, I mean, they've already released guidelines sort of highlighting different aspects of the Bitcoin network, how it's used, how people use it privately, and created a list of red flags to look out for. Yeah, I think they'll have a blacklist of addresses. I mean, one already exists. The OFAC has a blacklist of Bitcoin address, particularly from funds that have been stolen from exchanges in the past, and I believe some that were associated with ISIS as well. But yeah, so the Financial Action Task Force, it's funny because they don't actually pass laws. They create guidelines that then get passed on to the governments that are partnered in the Financial Action Task Force, which is basically all your Western governments and, a few others. And so the FATF will write guidelines that will then be adopted by the regulators in any given country. So yeah, I think they'll be alarmist about it and try to create blacklists. But again, I think it'll be a losing battle at the end of the day.
Yeah.
I guess
the purpose is like to taint those Bitcoin, right? It means to taint. You can deal. Could you, like, technically speak, like, delink them, like CoinMix them? So many times. I mean, I'm not a techie, but would that be a viable strategy to untaint them?
Yeah, you could coin join them. Many things you can do. The number of things that you can do too will be increased if we ever get Schnorr and Taproot activated in the protocol as well. But yeah, you could coin join using an implementation like Samurai, Wasabi, Join Market. You can use Lightning to attempt to create privacy, like the amount of developments happening on the Lightning network right now that will enable you to essentially do find privacy via the second layer or expanding on top of that Liquid.
Yeah, that was, by the way, a very beautiful episode you did just recently. I listened to it yesterday, this 3-hour long episode with, what's his name? Gentry or?
Ryan Gentry, yes.
Ryan Gentry, yeah.
From Lightning Labs.
Really mind-blowing. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's, so I think those blacklists, again, I think they'll be made, but I don't think they'll be as effective in the long run because I think Bitcoin's privacy tech, whether it be at the protocol level, be a Schnorr and Taproot, which aren't perfect for privacy, but they certainly help in combination with second layer solutions like Lightning, Liquid, the state chain implementation just got launched on Bitcoin's testnet and Mercury wallet. So if you get state chains and you combine them with something like coin swaps or PayJoin do submarine swaps with Liquid and stuff like that, like it's going to be easier to attain privacy and therefore harder to enforce the blacklist that will come out. But yeah, I think they'll come out with blacklist. It'll be a temporary nuisance, but nothing more than that.
Awesome. Very, very, cool. Very exciting.
Actually, I wanted to add on what Martin said. One thing that, I had this idea. I saw some people, we live in Iran and we have been always targeted to, we had a lot of exchanges banned people from their platforms. Like Bittrex did that, Poloniex did that, Bitfinex did that. BitMEX, all of the exchanges, actually. Most exchanges have banned users from Iran. So we have been always targeted, like, for foreign bank accounts. Like, in any country, they're going to shut down your account because you're an Iranian. So the thing with Bitcoin exchanges here in Iran, there were a lot of... So when I talk about CoinJoin and mixing to people in my Twitter and in Telegram groups and all that, so I had people come to me and tell me that can we expect or imagine Iranian exchanges, Bitcoin exchanges, to offer mixing or coin join as some of their key features in the future? So, this exchange has already coin join built in, and they always coin join their coins before they give it to you. So they could somehow hide the trace of ownership to the Iranian exchange or something. Can we see this in the future? So it was an interesting idea to maybe that Bitcoin exchanges in Iran, maybe in the future they need to do such a thing. Because I remember that when the first Iranians, first Bitcoin addresses got on the SDN list from the OFAC, it was two exchangers from Iran. And these guys built with bitcoins from ransomwares, and they obviously didn't know that this bitcoin comes from ransomwares, and they got on the SDN list. That's a very stupid list. There's two addresses which got who got on the SDN list, and two names. So we had the first blacklist, actually had Bitcoin exchangers in Iran. So it's not a very far-fetched idea to see Bitcoin exchanges in Iran to offer mixing as a feature.
not mixing for the user, mixing as to hide the trace that it comes from a Bitcoin exchange in Iran.
Yeah. And you actually already see this in Canada with Bull Bitcoin. They coin join their deposits, I'm pretty sure, already using Wasabi. So there's a precedent for an exchange doing that here in North America. I wouldn't be surprised. It just comes down to a matter of price, like where the fee market is too. Like, is it profitable to actually coin join and provide a good service that's cheap enough for your customers? But yeah, no, I think there's plenty of people doing it, and I think there will be even more unique second layer privacy solutions that are cheaper that'll make more sense too. So yeah, I think that'll definitely be a thing. Should be demanded too.
I'm going to tie in a little bit my question, or my desire, my wish, because it's always, you know, I really want to see mass adoption. I always said that it's going to be, you know, most probably one of these countries, you know, that are sanctioned hyperinflationary countries like Venezuela, Iran, that's going really to trigger this adoption rate, you know, a critical adoption rate. Because there's some questions from Bitcoin Maxi Radio, is how do normal Iranians look at Bitcoin? And I see, you know, urgent need. There's a lack of knowledge. And I see, you know, how people are, you know, getting to use Zia and starting, you know, asking the questions everywhere. You know, do they use it for transactions? How do normal Iranians buy Bitcoin? And how do Iranian banks look at Bitcoin? Like, what's the atmosphere? I mean, maybe you want to give like a general overview. What's going on?
So banks don't deal with Bitcoin in Iran. So they don't, like, you could use your bank account to buy Bitcoin. So that's the thing that I heard that most foreign countries don't let people do. But you could use your bank account to buy Bitcoin. And you could buy maybe even large amounts of Bitcoin using your bank account and bank transfers. But the banks themselves don't transfer Bitcoin, or they don't touch Bitcoin at all, which seems, yeah, it's commonsensical. Yeah. Sorry. And but the most methods of like accessing Bitcoin here in Iran are like exchanges and OTCs, some Bitcoin somehow, very, very similar to Bitcoin vendors or something, where you could just, some of them have websites, some use Telegram channels or Telegram accounts, and you just tell them that I want Bitcoin, and they tell you that how much, you give them the money and they send you the Bitcoin. It is all mostly conducted by bank transfers, although. And there are very few methods of accessing Bitcoin with no KYC. It's, you should either know people or have friends who could like provide you with Bitcoin, because we have a very, very failing payment system here in Iran, which is crowded with fraud, money fraud, and banking fraud. And actually, the exchanges don't KYC you, so they could use the information. If they have to, they will use the information. But the first reason for them is that the exchanges don't get in trouble, because they just got some fraud money, and they should just pay back the money while they gave the Bitcoin. So the exchanges try to protect themselves. That's why they do KYC. But, well, we know that KYC is no good. So I hope to see some more methods. So I know that HODL supports like the Iranian market, and they have a Telegram group of Farsi for Farsi users, and they have like content in Farsi. And I know that people could use BISC too. But because of the situation with the banking fraud and with the situation inflation, you can't just like limit to, this is a piece of fiat money here. So if you want to use such a piece, you're going to need like two basket cases maybe of this just to buy like 0.1 Bitcoin.
So what's the inflation rate? The inflation rate is it around like 34%? Is that
approximately? I don't know. I can't keep track of that. And it's not actually official. It's like we don't have an official thing about inflation rate here in Iran. We don't even have a USD price officially. It's all black market. So I don't know if anyone could actually calculate that. So that's the thing by accessing Bitcoin here in Iran, and about using Bitcoin. So I'm this is the surprising part, that like in 2017 and 2018, where the main thing was investing in Bitcoin, I was always thinking that when would it be possible to see people using Bitcoin, mm-hmm. who have no clue about Bitcoin? When would it be possible to see people use Bitcoin and they don't know anything about Bitcoin? They only see it a method to facilitate their transactions or something. It's not like that they are Bitcoin enthusiasts. And right now I'm seeing this, and I'm really surprised actually. Like in the last few months, 6 months or so, I've seen people do remittance with Bitcoin. People who are like doctors, like people who are students in foreign countries and send Bitcoin back to home, mm-hmm. to their parents. And I see a lot of people who are interested in using Bitcoin for the businesses, like some artists, some who want to work with foreign businesses or foreign people. There are a lot of people who are saving, they are changing their savings from, I don't know, USD or gold or mostly fiat to Bitcoin. And this is happening all the time with people who are not Bitcoin enthusiasts, who are not following Bitcoin. Actually, they see that the only thing they may follow is the price, that they see that, okay, the Bitcoin price is rising. So what's Bitcoin? Is it peer-to-peer network? They don't know. They see it just a better option, better alternative. Mm-hmm. So, this is the situation with the adoption here. It's not like that there are millions of people getting into this, but I'm seeing a lot of people. So I've never saw this in 2017 or 2018.
This is what I'm talking about.
That time it was only traders.
Yeah.
It was only traders and investors and Bitcoin enthusiasts. Yeah. Now, even the traders are less, I see less traders than before, because Bitcoin is not very easy to trade. And I see more people who want to use, invest, store their value in Bitcoin, actually.
Awesome. Very interesting. You know, Marty, if my demographics stats are correct, I think 70 to 80% of Iran's population is, correct me if I'm wrong, is approximately between 30 and 35 years old. So a pretty, let's say, relatively young generation. I mean, what would be your message to these people? And I'm like, you know, this would be the hope, you know, to break free, you know, like break totally free.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if I'm qualified to be sending motivational speeches to the people in Iran, but no, I mean, Bitcoin provides an alternative that allows you to do things that you can't do within your current system and that you're not allowed to based on countries outside of your own dictating how you can use your money. And that's, we're at a pivotal point in human history, whether you're an American or an Iranian, like, the monetary system that we're all subjected to, the global monetary system run by the US dollar, does not care for the individual. If we keep going down this path and stay on this course, we're all basically, no matter where we are in the world, going to be cattle herded into a digital panopticon in which the powers that be control your ability to move and earn money, and they're going to dictate where you can do it, how you can do it, who you can do it with. And that's not the way the world should work. I mean, I think any Iranians watching this right now probably understand this a lot better than people living in America, frankly. You've been subjected to it already. And I think that will continue to happen across the rest of the world. And Bitcoin simply provides an alternative where that's not possible. If you want to have full control of your money and use a monetary system that respects your purchasing power and your slice of the overall pie, then Bitcoin is that monetary system for you. Is you're experiencing hyperinflation, having to go to a broker with baskets of your currency to buy 0.01 Bitcoin. I think that, if anything, that should really highlight the need for Bitcoin, is you can get away from that system that forces you to carry baskets of cash around just to buy simple goods. That won't be necessary under a Bitcoin standard. And more importantly, it's a vehicle for liberty in the digital age around the world, which is pretty exciting. And you can send that Bitcoin wherever, as I was explaining. You can be an Iranian student here in America, and you can send money back to your parents with ease, and there's not going to be any questions asked. The Bitcoin network doesn't know to ask any questions. Even if these blacklist address come out, like if you're using Bitcoin in a non-custodial fashion and you actually hold it, it doesn't matter. You can still get around that blacklist sending it through the network. I think the message is simple. Like, do you want to use a better money, one that respects you and your autonomy fully, or just subject yourself to the Iranian monetary system and then the global monetary system run on the dollar, which is controlled by politicians and corrupt bureaucrats who really don't care about you at the end of the day.
And entities that are above the law. I mean, I need to emphasize this every time, the central banks above the law. This is why, you know, I love your newsletter, the podcast you do, Tales of the Crypt, because you give people, you know, the zoom out bigger picture of why are we doing this? You know, you just touch upon, you know, the panopticon surveillance. I mean, we're going into direction. We're going to extreme direction. It's either centralized or, you know, enslavement, total control and surveillance, or total decentralization and freedom and prosperity and abundance. Can we have a parallel society evolving out of this, whatever, with free private cities and all these, you know, not utopian visions? So that's why, you know, again, I said in the beginning, I love your work because it gives people the bigger picture, the bigger comprehension of why are we doing this? Why Bitcoin? You know, and it's right there. It's the, you know, it's the elephant in the room. We just need to learn, educate ourselves and use it. That's all we need to do, right?
Yeah. And it is here. Yeah, I think it's inevitable at this point. It's just whether how quickly it's adopted. And that's the whole, I think it'll be like more importantly, most importantly probably, is it'll lead to a peaceful world. Like you don't,
yeah,
or a much more peaceful world. Like if you have, the world has a lot of conflict right now because of the monetary system that forces people to go through the US dollar to buy commodities and to transact across borders. Like, why should the US government, its regulators, and the Federal Reserve have full control over the money that basically prices everything around the world? It doesn't make a lot of sense. It doesn't seem very fair. And it leads to a lot of conflict, particularly in the energy markets. Particularly, there's a lot of proxy wars over being able to move gas and oil across borders. And the U.S. tends to favor countries who will protect its status as the arbiter of the petrodollar. And so Bitcoin, an apolitical currency that is not controlled by any one sovereign nation, just creates a condition where peaceful trade can happen. You don't have to worry about that friction of foreign exchange, which is just an added cost to buying stuff around the world. Like, I'm told here in America that Iran's a pretty terrible country. I'm sitting here talking to an Iranian citizen. He seems like a really cool dude, very similar to me. Like, you can get away from these politicians who really mess things up for the common man, people like Zaya and myself, who just want to raise a family and eat well and be a good person. Like, it's 99.9% of people around the world.
Yeah. And, you know, you said peace. I mean, it's not some kind of utopian kitsch thing. I mean, this is, if people just understood sometimes, I'm thinking after, you know, after talking to Jeff Booth, you know, you talked about to him, it's like deflationary economies, what kind of prosperity and abundance and freedom people could have with, you know, not only the information technology or smartphones, but I'm like on every structural level you can think of, like on every economical level, on every scientific technological level, that could literally like serve humanity. Like people would literally work less, much less, maybe 15, 20 hours voluntarily, and the rest of the time they would really contribute back to society. And we would have, yeah, you know, I mean, I don't need to go on a rant here, but it's, the future is so bright. If just people understood what is true, the, you know, the effects or the bigger picture behind capitalism, free market principles, you know, not distorting price signals, and the hardest and scarcest money, Bitcoin, right?
Yeah, no, it's crazy. Learn about money. It's important. We fucked up the money. We need to fix it. Bitcoin fixes it. Most people in the world don't realize it yet, but I truly believe that is the core of a lot of the strife that we see around the world today, that we fucked up the money. We need to fix it.
Yeah, beautiful said. Now that's a good way to wrap this up. Any final thoughts or anything we maybe I left out, questions or anything we should know, or where can people find you, of course? Zia, Marty.
Yeah, you could just find me on Twitter. Yeah, so I wanted just to, actually, I have friends here who are actually a fan of what Marty does, his newsletter. And they wanted to tell me, told me that, just to say this to Marty, that you're doing, they wanted to thank you, and they wanted to say hi to Matt too.
Well, I'm flattered. It's crazy. That's another beautiful part of Bitcoin too. I just wrap up on this note, like it brings people from around the world together around this one open source protocol that is giving liberty back to people in the digital age. Like, it's beautiful just being a part of it as a content creator, having people reach out from Iran, which is crazy to me. If you were to tell me 5 years ago that I would have Iranians reading a newspaper, I'd write a newspaper I'd write, and they'd actually like it, I'd be like, what? That's crazy. So it just highlights part of the beautiful nature of Bitcoin, the fact that the common man around the world, the common man, no matter where he is, if he's in the United States and Iran and Africa and China, wherever he may be, they're just able to focus on this protocol and build it out together without anybody stopping them, or at least stopping most of them, which is a pretty beautiful thing that we're able to do this on a global level and work together as common man to common man in different borders is pretty crazy that we're all building out the system that could potentially unshackle us from the enslavement of a world that runs on a money that runs on debt. It's like a global Manhattan project that we're doing under the scenes, and it feels pretty cool to be a part of. And again, I'm extremely flattered that your friends read the newsletter and listen to the podcast. I'll definitely be sure to pass along the message to Matt. You guys keep fighting a good fight too. We're big fans of you guys because it's arguably probably harder to use Bitcoin and more risky in Iran than it is in the U.S. today. So anybody that's putting their neck out there and trying to educate others despite what the government may or may not do to you, it's laudable and something I respect the hell out of. So thank you for doing what you do as well, Zia.
Yeah, thanks. We have a lot of friends actually nowadays. I have this friend who translated the Bitcoin white paper to Farsi, and actually it's on bitcoin.org right now. I have another friend who recently contributed to the Bitcoin code actually. And these are all Iranians.
Oh, yeah.
We have friends who are actually contributing to Summer Wallet. They are trying to build like better, like a GUI for Windows actually. So we have it on Linux, but we don't have a GUI for Whirlpool on Windows. So
they're building that. They are trans. Some of them are translating different books. Like the last book that was translated. This is all being done actually in a non-profitable way. They are just doing it for their passion. They want to just increase the awareness, raise the awareness here about Bitcoin. The last book that was translated was this Little Bitcoin book. Actually, it was by Alex and Jimmy Song. So we're seeing a lot of these contributions nowadays. We have like open source stuff right now. People are contributing, translating stuff. And I recently started actually educational resources on security, on privacy, and all that on YouTube. And it's getting much better community than I expected. It's really thriving. It's trying to raise awareness in Iran.
Yeah, and this is what I was talking about, you know, this dynamic interplay sort of, you know, on an educational level. Again, thank you so much, guys, for this talk. I really enjoyed this, and I think it's totally underrated work that you guys are doing, and also Zio, you know, with your educational channel, and, you know, Marty, with your newsletter, because you touch people not only, you know, in the hearts, but on intellectual comprehension level, and you know, you're able to like zoom out and make them understand the question, why we're here, you know, why Bitcoin, why we're doing all this, you know. It's not because we're bored or anything, but we really want to create a better world, right? A better human civilization where people are free finally. And because it's, I think, beyond imagination. People can't even imagine, you know, how, let me just say this, how criminal this system is, you know, beginning with central banks, governments, the military-industrial corporate complex. Is everything is so, you know, so centralized and so above the law that the only power we have is to create, as Buckminster Fuller, I think, said, you know, to create a new structure, right? A new system, and don't waste energy fighting the old established system or the old structures. I mean, I'm just paraphrasing here. But thank you again, guys, and Marty, Zia, and if you have any final thoughts, or where can people find you on Twitter, or any resources?
I'm on Twitter at Marty Bent, tftc.io. That's where I post a lot of my content. But final thought, just keep fighting a good fight. I think we're going to win. I'm confident. As long as we have individuals like yourself, Kayvon and Zia around the world, like I think I'm happy to be on the front line with you two gentlemen.
Really enjoyed this. All right, Marty. See ya. Okay, Zia, let's do a wrap up, the two of us. What did you think?
Yeah, how'd you find great. This? So so the thing is that I had a lot of ideas about like what the government is, what is the plan, and what's going to be the situation, and the future in the situation for in the future for the, what the government is doing here. And what I was thinking, what my ideas like somehow are confirmed, but what Marty said, so, and what you said actually too, we're gonna do this, and the mining is gonna thrive more, and it's gonna flourish more, and the adoption is gonna increase definitely. We are seeing people from all over the world using it. Bitcoin, and we are seeing all people from all over the world having similar experiences and having similar worldviews about Bitcoin. So I guess that it's inevitable. So it's going to happen, and this was confirmed for me right now, is because I see people from different places with different like governments and stuff have the same view on what's going to happen.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I really enjoyed this talk because it gives, this is the purpose, you know, of this podcast, also to inspire people, whether they're from Iran or not. It's just this is our moment. I think this is our moment to it sounds a little bit kitsch, but, you know, to unite and to comprehend like the bigger vision behind behind Bitcoin. You know, people, I think, have no clue, especially when you don't understand, you know, the essence of money or the basics of economics or Austrian economics or, you know, the power of decentralization of hardest and scarcest money and deflationary economics, deflationary technologies. It's I think, beyond imagination what kind of prosperity and abundance and peace and human civilization, which, again, and I'm repeating myself, but this is why I'm in Bitcoin, you know, because I see a future that we could have had like a long time ago. But unfortunately, you know, whatever the powers to be, you know, they had obviously a totally different agenda. It's all about, you know, enslavement, control, surveillance, and systematic theft.
Exactly. We're gonna change that for
Bitcoin. Exactly. Okay, see you. So talk to you soon. We'll stay in touch. Okay. Thank you again for your work. See you. Bye.
Bye.
Bye, see ya. Whew. Okay, guys, ladies and gentlemen, I really, really enjoyed this talk with Marty Bent from Tales of the Crypt. Definitely, you know, sign up for his newsletter. It's microdosages of psilocybin and DMT. It's like mind expanding, conscious expanding, and really, you know, expands your comprehension, whether you're, you know, a no coiner, pre coiner, not interested at all, or a total advanced Bitcoiner. Every time, you know, it transforms our consciousness, our thinking, our even our emotions, and especially our comprehension level, holistic comprehension level. So thank you again for your support. Make sure you follow Zia and Marty on Twitter. Make sure, please, subscribe to my YouTube channel, subscribe to my podcast platforms, the heartblood of my work. You can reach me on Twitter, LinkedIn, DM me if you want, or email me at hello@thetotalconnector.com. If you want to support me or us, contribute to the film project, Humanity Rooted in Bitcoin. If you have any skills, talents, or resources, or you want to sponsor us, or you want to sponsor my podcast, please get in touch with me. You can also reach me on Telegram, Kevan Davani. And yeah, all the links I'm going to put in the show notes. And again, thank you so much from my heart and from my soul. I'll see you soon again. Bye.